On the roundtable today, we're doing the pandemic pivot. There's been huge upheaval, of course, because of COVID-19. It's been devastating for many businesses and, of course, the people who work in them as well. Some areas, like international aviation, have been brought to a complete standstill, and it's hard to see a way out of that. Not very easy to pivot a 747. Others have been able to continue more or less unchanged, so long as the virus is kept at bay, of course. But for some businesses, particularly those in manufacturing, there have been some amazing opportunities. And others have used the enforced pause that the COVID-19 lockdowns have imposed upon us to come up with completely new lines of work, in some cases, new businesses. On the roundtable today, we'll meet some of the business owners who've successfully pivoted into new areas during the pandemic, and we'll try and tease out some of the commonalities of their success. So joining us at the roundtable are John Condylis, the founder of Nobody Denim. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Great to be on.
Great. Excellent. We're also joined by Jeremy Fleming, the co-founder of Stage Kings. Welcome, Jeremy.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. We've got Judith Ridgway, the head of philanthropy and marketing at Sisterworks, which is an NGO helping asylum seekers, refugees and new migrants. So not just pivoting in the for-profit sector. Welcome to you, Judith.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And to keep an eye on the big picture of business transformation, we're also joined by partner at McKinsey & Co, Jenny Child, who specialises in the retail and consumer sector. Welcome, Jenny.
Hi there. Great to be with you.
Great to have you all on the roundtable this morning. Let's start, if we can, with you, John. Tell us a little bit about Nobody Denim before the pandemic and then what the pivot was.
So Nobody Denim's been around for 20 years. We're a fully vertical operational unit from design right through to distribution. We're an Australian manufactured brand. Everything was, I guess, tracking in the right direction. Come February, when the pandemic hit, it just turned everything upside down. Mm. So it was quite interesting at that point in time. Where do we go? What was happening? The big unknown. And I guess what we do have and what we've realised is the capability of being flexible and the skill set and the know-how of how to actually adapt. And everyone started using this word pivot back in the early days. So that was one of the key things we've been doing for quite a while. When you're in the actual fashion industry, in branding, you have to learn how to pivot quickly because trends do change quite rapidly. So that's something that we were quite used to.
So John, exactly what did you change doing? Like, what were you making at the beginning of February and what was coming out of the Nobody Denim operations, say, by March?
So beginning of February, we were just still producing our denim. James was still manufactured in our factory and continuing to grow. But as we know, with all the pandemic and pretty much March almost came to a standstill, still unknown. By the end of March, it basically did stop. We did actually go into a bit of a lockdown ourselves, not knowing what was going to happen. I think the team took the initiative on the factory floor, where we all started getting on the front foot and started producing, prototyping masks, isolation gowns, anything that we can go out to market with, and what we can actually help and serve. It was one of the Instagram posts that we put out saying, we've got a manufacturing unit that we hear we could help. Please reach out and we can serve.
So you put an Instagram post out. Who responded to that?
Quite a few people, to be honest. I think the general public, we're talking doctors, we're talking clinics, we're talking hospitals, and I think that's when it all began. The media actually did jump on it, which was great. It helped going, well, these guys, are you making masks? Well, we'd love to. But at that point in time, there was a big unknown of what was required. One of the key things that was required was scrubs early in the piece. So we started producing some scrubs for the Royal Melbourne Hospital, which then led on to, well, what's next, which then led into making manufacturing of masks. Became a necessity of reusable masks, and that's how it's led into what we're doing today, producing for the Victorian government reusable masks.
So nobody's denim producing reusable masks for the Victorian government. John, give us a sense, in terms of scale, the business that you're operating now, is it genuinely a replacement for the business that you were doing in denim before the pandemic?
No, we're actually still producing the denim.
Right.
This is the interesting bit. So we've been able to, I guess, split the factory in half, create another area. We've just basically employed in the last week and a half around 25 people. So we've brought our team back from 3 days a week. They're working close to 5 to 6 days a week in the denim section, which is still going okay. That's starting to pick up, which is a really good sign. And we're at the same time, we've introduced a new manufacturing capability of producing masks or PPE, which has moved from 0 people to 25.
Yeah,
so we
right.
have two areas, both working 5 to 6 days a week.
It's great to hear. All right, let's move on to you now, Jeremy Fleming. You're the co-founder of Stage Kings. Now, Stage Kings was in a business that was seriously hit by the shutdown of COVID-19. Tell us what the day-to-day business of Stage King was before COVID-19 hit, and again, what have you changed?
Sure. So we're in the business of building stages and structures for events. You know, for concerts and festivals and big events, some stuff like Pop-Up Globe Theatre we built 3 times around the country, and the Edinburgh Military Tattoo, we built the castle set for that. The opening ceremony of the Commonwealth Games, we built that set. So we've done some pretty big stuff over 5 years that we've been in operation. And we were down in Melbourne doing a set piece for the Formula One for March 13 when the public gathering ban was put into place, which effectively shut down the whole live events industry.
And, yeah, so it was a complete standstill for the business, yeah?
Complete standstill. Over the following week, we had lost 100% of our upcoming work, and we had to make some pretty heartbreaking decisions at the time to lay some staff off that we'd had for 5 years and just plan how we were going to get through zero income. For no one knew how long. That was the hard part.
What have you done, Jeremy?
So we were talking to a few people and saw that Office Works and a lot of these suppliers didn't have any work from home office furniture available.
Desks right, yeah, because everyone was shopping for how to set up the home office all
Correct.
Of a sudden. Well,
that's
a canny thought. What did you do with it?
So whole industries were going to be working from home. We have CNC routers. Our head of production, Mick Jessup, is also a part-time furniture designer, and so we were in the lucky situation where we could start to make some work-from-home office furniture, which we did. And very quickly, it took us 48 hours to turn around. We started making these desks, and like John, we went to social media, and it was picked up very quickly, and a lot of people connected with our story. So 4 months later, we've sold 13,000 pieces of furniture.
Wow. So that's a huge number. How does that compare in terms of like overall turnover to the business you were doing before?
Sure. So luckily for us, currently winter, we've been doing this through winter, which is often a downtime for the live event industry anyway. Let's say coming into summer now, I think that's when we're going to see the biggest downturn. But it's certainly got us through winter and allowed us to keep our doors open. And we've more than doubled our staff. We had 23 staff at the time that we were looking to lay off. We're now at 56 wow. staff working again. So we've luckily been able to keep those staff on, as well as we're donating $10 from every desk to Support Act to try and support the event industry a little further.
Yeah, so just quickly, I was going to mention that as well. Tell us what Support Act does.
Support Act's an organisation that really help the live event industry and event crew who fall through the cracks of the government safety nets. They you know, a lot of these guys work gig to gig. They have there's a lot of mental health issues, and Support Act really help those people that aren't getting the help from anywhere else. So if they have bills to pay, Support Act will step in and do that, or their rent, and just really helping the most at need in our industry. And They're doing an amazing job, and we're really happy we can support them.
Well, it's great to hear that Stage Kings has been able to find a line of business that that can produce that revenue, increase the number of employees and make those donations as well. Jeremy, we were sort of joking about everyone rushing to get their standing desk and home office set up. Do you have a sense of whether the surge in business that you've seen in the new line has to do with that short-term need of people setting up to work from home? Do you think it's a sustainable business in the long term?
Short term, it was certainly just office furniture, and we were doing the desks and things to help that. You know, I do think that people will be working home a lot more into the future, but we've also increased our range. We've now got over 40 products, so we're really now just talking to our followers and asking what they want, and it's really more of a community driven innovation now. So anyone that that says they need to sort their garage out, we'll come up with something to do that. Scooter racks and, you know, guitar racks, surfboards, skateboard racks, all these sorts of things. So we're going to keep that that dialogue going, and we've also now slightly pivoted again into early learning products. So we've partnered with another company, Mud Kitchen, to bring these early learning products out as well. So
we're going to double pivot, Jeremy. You're really outdoing yourself. Very impressive.
Pivot on a pivot. that's right.
Look, thanks very much for telling us about that transformation. That's fascinating. If I could come now to you, Judith Ridgway. As I said, it's not just the for-profit sector that's had dramatic changes imposed by COVID-19, but also a pivot in the sort of production that occurs within an organisation. Can you tell us about Sisterworks?
Sisterworks is a not-for-profit. We've been around about 7 years, so relatively young, and we support migrant, refugee and asylum seeker women who've come to Australia to build their self-confidence, their skills, and look to what they want to do for the future now that they're in a new country. And we focus on producing eco-friendly, reusable products, or that's what we were doing pre the COVID and the shutdown. And then early March, before the first lockdown, in feedback actually that we were getting from some of our sisters that come from countries where masks are more common from the point of view of, well, you've got the flu going around and things like that, our product manager thought, maybe we should just put masks out, you know, for those people who might like it at this time. We weren't thinking of it as being a particularly large business, I don't think. And it just took off from there, actually.
I can imagine. What sort of numbers have you been doing?
We're now producing about 10,000 a week. We're still a very small producer, if you look at what John and he is producing. But for us, this is significant. You know, we started off with like 10 a week, and we're now at almost 10,000 a week. So,
wow.
The magnitude of it is mind-blowing for an organisation of our size.
And obviously part of that is providing work and income to the makers in the Sisterworks network. How big is that network, and has it got bigger because of the demand for your new products?
Yes, it's definitely got bigger. Like John also, we're increasing daily and weekly with the number of women who are approaching us. We started off, I'm not too sure how many we had doing masks originally. It would have only been probably a couple, though we did have our sisters, as we call them, making our other reusable products.
Yeah.
But now just focused on masks, we've got well over 30 of our sisters doing that. And we've also gone into partnership with a couple of local migrant businesses as well. And they've got, say, two or three women who, because of COVID, these are often alteration businesses, and they were no longer getting the business. And so they've approached us, and we've talked to them, and we've said, yes, let's get together. So we're extending our reach in a slightly different way to what we normally would. But it does allow us to meet the demand that's coming through at the moment.
Fantastic stuff. We're talking about pandemic pivots in businesses and other operations on the roundtable today with John Condylis, who's from Nobody Denim, now the maker of masks as well. Jeremy Fleming, who makes all sorts of things, co-founder of Stage Kings, but now doing standing desks and has mastered the art of the double pivot. pivot, we've heard, into early learning products as well. And Judith Ridgway, as we heard there, SisterWorks has had a huge boom in mask making. Let's get the bigger picture now from Jenny Child. Jenny's a partner at McKinsey & Co. Jenny, how widespread is these sorts of transformations in business at the moment? And I suppose another sort of correlated question to that is, how realistic is it for most businesses to genuinely change what they do?
Well, first of all, it's really exciting to hear how small businesses are pivoting and moving so quickly to reinvent themselves. And I think that's an example for really anyone in the corporate sector as well. Of course, facing bigger challenges, our clients are, from a scale perspective, huge, and they've got lots of employees that they've got to transform to do things differently. They also have history, right? So in some cases, models that are decades old of the way that work gets done. But as you said, I mean, transformation is happening everywhere. And in some ways, you're forced to transform when all of a sudden you've got to send all of your employees home and everyone's working remotely. I think a lot of our clients have really surprised themselves. In the first few months of COVID, it was all about business continuity planning and survival. And so that meant that they had to immediately stand up teams that were cross-functional in nature, that moved really quickly and did a lot of the agile, you know, activity that we're hearing from the other participants on the panel, but for the whole business. And that really broke a lot of myths about big corporations being able to function in that way, to move that quickly, to have cross-functional teams that really broke people out of their silos. You know, people that went to bed at night and woke up in the morning thinking about my marketing job were then forced to think about a different axis, which was problem solving something for the business that needed to get done, and it needed to get done now. And so that really has been, I think, a pivot that has launched them into a new set of thinking as they look forward and say, we need to emerge stronger from this. What are some of the things that we learned in those early days that we can hang on to?
In the case of the bigger businesses who make up your client base, as you were saying, is it more a case of transformation to providing a service via digital in a way that perhaps wasn't the core of the business previously? Are there many examples of, you know, nuts and bolts manufacturing that's been transformed in a way that's sort of made large businesses continue to operate at the scales they were at pre-pandemic?
We'll see transformation end-to-end in businesses. I mean, I was just describing transformation and ways of working and how work gets done.
Yep.
That's one element. You'll also, as you mentioned, digital. We know that the uptake, all of our consumer research and everything we see out there is telling us the uptake of all things digital, the way I receive information as a consumer, the way I want to buy things across all demographics is really ramped up. So businesses, of course, that have maybe a brick and mortar structure have to figure out how to tap into that if they want to survive and grow in the future. So, of course, that will be part of their transformation. And then, as you mentioned, supply chain manufacturing. I think a lot of the thinking that's happening now is what's the strategic posture that we need to take around controlling our supply chain that we never really thought of before, because, you know, we were so on this globalization movement, and that was really giving us energy and efficiency. But there are some constraints to that when you have crises like this. So how do we get to a better balance? So there'll be transformation really end to end across the value chain of a business.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are thinking now about a return to manufacturing locally and revival and diversification on that front. Let's get John Condylis' thoughts about that. John, you told us about Nobody Denim before, and I was interested that you were sort of describing the sort of two parts of the factory, one doing your traditional business of Nobody Denim, and then the other doing the masks and those new elements. Is that entirely different plant and machinery involved in doing the new strain of business?
Surprisingly, no.
Right.
It's really, it's actually been quite interesting of what is really required. Like I said earlier, we've been producing, we've actually done prototypes of gowns. We've produced scrubs for hospitals. We're all using the same equipment. There are minor tweaks and adjustments, but that's okay. We do have the expertise to actually implement that. it's just about the flexibility and the can-do attitude. It's all in the mindset.
Yeah, was that something that you'd done before the pandemic, actually sort of, you know, get your staff together, as you described, and take their views on other things that this business might be able to do? I mean, was that sort of a happily enforced opportunity by COVID?
It was. I mean, our motto has always been, why can't we do it?
Right.
I always challenge everyone. I mean, it's not so much, well, here goes John again, but it's more so about, well, let's really think about it. Why can't we do it? Well, we actually can if we do this. Okay, so what's stopping us? And it's about understanding the barriers, regardless of what you do. As you just heard, there are so many people that are coming out of the woodwork and actually are cutting and sewing and manufacturing masks.
Absolutely.
It's the cut and sew operation. And you just realize how big the industry really is. And it's a forgotten industry.
Might be one that's coming very much back into to fashion and being, you know, a very important part of the economy. Jeremy, you've sort of almost literally come out of the woodwork with the standing desk. The scale of operation that you've got to, is that something that you've been able to do within the existing infrastructure of Stage Kings, or are you really having to sort of fit out your business in a different way because of this new line of operation?
So similar to John, we had a lot of the machinery that we've needed to continue to make these desks now. So as a set building company, we had a CNC router and we have the crew that know how to do that. And so really it's just that we looked at this as another project to start, and that's how we were able to do it so quickly. When you're building stages, every day is different anyway. One day we're building pop-up Globe Theatre, the next day we're building a 26-metre tall lion for a music festival or something like that. So always different and pivoting all the time. So it's really that flexibility and agility in thinking that allowed us to do that.
It sounds like in both cases, both John and Jeremy, social media played a role in sort of lighting the spark of your new line of business. Is that something that you expected, Jeremy?
Look, not that I expected. I wrote an open letter when we first went live on the 24th of March and put it on the site and put it on Facebook. And I really didn't expect what was going to happen. That letter quickly was seen by a million people, shared thousands of times, and it's sort of our only ever experience with viral social media, which we're very thankful for. We were just very open and honest, and we weren't trying to sell a product to start with. We were just telling our story, and this is what we were doing to try and keep the doors open and the lights on and our crew working, and that's what people connected with.
I suppose, though, that remarkable sort of breakout social media success, Jenny Child, might point to the fact that maybe these successful cases we're talking about are really the exceptions to the rule. Do you think that that it's realistic for other manufacturing businesses to transform as successfully as John and Jeremy have?
I think it's certainly possible. I think the idea of being innovative in the way you communicate with consumers is a perfect example. That's the digital touch point that's accessible to anyone, large corporation, you know, small business. And the challenge is that you see some people navigating this with the consumer at the heart of what they're doing, right? I think if you hear John's story, if you hear Jeremy's story, it was very much centered on closeness to consumers, where they were, what they needed, and then innovating around that. I think the larger you get, the easier it is to get away from that. And so the important thing that we're talking to a lot of our clients right now is that consumer centricity. And if you're used to being one step back in the value chain, you know, let's say you're a FMCG player and you think of your customer as the retailers, you got to pivot that. You've got to move really quickly to actually say what's going on with consumers. What's the story of what the average Australian is going through right now? And how do we take what our brand is, what our message is, and make it relatable to that experience and use technology and social media and all these things to actually communicate that effectively?
We've only got a couple of minutes left, but if I could ask you, Judith Ridgway, as well, you talked about the profound effect that this upsurge of business has had on Sisterworks, slightly unexpected way. What would you say are the main lessons that your organisation has learned from this huge upsurge in the mask business as a result of COVID-19?
I think very much it's about team. I mean, we are a small organisation, and the ability of the team to get together and one person had an idea and then the rest of the team to be able to work with that idea. We've had to change, you know, some areas quite significantly because of the volumes we're doing. You know, one is that our sisters are working from home. So, you know, how do we get the materials to them that they can do the making of the masks and get them back so that we can get them out? Little things along the lines of, you know, we're used to doing maybe 50 orders in a week, and now all of a sudden we're doing, you know, 10,000 orders in a week. So how do we streamline some of those processes that we didn't have to get to pre-COVID times? And just all the team pulling together has been absolutely amazing. And the ideas that come from the different people. Oh, yes, you might be the marketing person, but this marketing person says, well, have you thought about this and this and this? You know, and that has just been fantastic to see the team pull together so well. And the sisters themselves too has been absolutely amazing because they themselves have had great ideas and they've come back and said, what about this and what about this? And I could do it this way. And seeing that has just, yeah.
It sounds like a real theme there from all organisations is openness, willingness to change and getting the best out of your team. It's been great hearing all those stories from all of you today. John Condylis from Nobody Denim, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thanks also to you, Jeremy Fleming of Stage Kings. Really enjoyed hearing about the variety of your produce.
Thanks so much.
Great. And thanks also to Judith Ridgway from Sisterworks.
Thank you.
And Jenny Child, partner at McKinsey. Thanks very much, Jenny.
Thanks, Julian. Thanks for having me on.
It's been a great pleasure. And that's it for another week of Sunday Extra. Thanks to the entire Sunday Extra production team, Sky Doherty, Chris Bullock, Isabel Summerson, Edwina Stott and Jen Parsonage. This is Julian Morrow. I'll talk to you next Sunday.